Well, hello and welcome to another episode of the At Random podcast. My name is Rick Timmis.
And I'm John Wordsworth.
And John, I'm delighted today because we've got two guests joining us. We have Jonathan Riddle and Scarlett Clark, who are both Kubuntu developers from the Kubuntu community. So I'd just like to introduce Scarlett. Good day, Scarlett. How are you today?
Hello. I'm good.
Excellent. And hello, Jonathan. Nice to see you. How are you today?
Buenas noches. Good afternoon.
So we've been wrestling in the pre-show a little bit, just trying to get the lower thirds working. But Google have decided that they're only going to make this work on Apple OS X. So we've done a little bit of engineering work, and those of you can see that if you're looking for the name tag, it's actually up on the piece of paper behind Jonathan on the wall. And hey, presto.
So there it is. Sunny Barcelona.
So, of course, we're one down today. So this probably will open this opportunity to poke some fun at Jackson, who is having recently been pregnant for a significant amount of time, has now had his baby and is busy looking after it. John, isn't that right?
If Jack was pregnant, I think that would be a bigger story.
Yeah, so, sadly, unfortunately, Jack can't be with us today because he's obviously supporting his family and taking care of his baby, which his baby's now 2 weeks old. So if you are watching Jack, oh, it's all pain now, buddy. Oh dear, I've done all of that a while ago. So my children are older now and grown up. But I tell you what, it is jolly hard work at the beginning, in the early days. It really is. Anyway,
as I was saying before, in 2 weeks' time, the baby will have a Facebook page and a Google Plus page, and the baby can join us here.
Absolutely, yeah, quite right. And we can begin the training so the baby can aspire to become a Kubuntu community member and a Kubuntu developer.
That's what we like.
No expectations there, you know, just
Of course, I'm going to be really broken hearted, of course, if Jack's baby becomes a Kubuntu ninja before me. Not going to be very happy about that.
You will have your competition there.
To be fair, if she follows after Jack in any way, the second she touches a computer, it'll just fall apart. So that's Jack's special gift with technology. It's like, I touched it and the monitor fell off.
Yeah, that's true, actually. I mean, I've not actually really introduced Jack to Kubuntu after the damage he managed to do to the Ubuntu beta releases. I thought, we'll leave all of his bug reports over where somebody else has to triage them other than me. Anyway, right, so, well, of course, we're approaching season of... that time of the year when, you know, you take your children and you dunk their head in buckets full of apples and things like this. And of course, then the children all come around banging on the door and looking for trick or treat. So this week I've got a very interesting little beer here that I managed to lay my hands on. This is it's a Hobgoblin. It's the unofficial beer of Halloween, and it is a... kind of got some really interesting pumpkin pictures on it. So this is Rick's kind of show beer for this week. And I suspect that after the conversation we had last time, John, with you in Sweden, you probably haven't quite earned enough money yet to buy a beer in Sweden, have you?
Oh, this sounds like horrific, but the worst thing happened to me a week and a half ago. So every Tuesday we go out for drinks after work, and I had... about three or four drinks bought for me in the night. And every time, Swedes don't typically do rounds, but where I work, they do. So, and a few pints went around, and I was like, oh, it's my turn. And they're like, oh, do it next time. So last Tuesday, as in 2 days ago, when I went to the pub, it was like £40 for a round. It wasn't even many people.
So, well, I suppose we ought to talk about locations for a minute and give the viewers and the listeners a kind of some idea where we're coming into the show from. So, well, I'm based obviously in Exeter in Devon here in the UK. And Scarlett, whereabouts in the world are you today?
Portland, Oregon, USA.
Portland, hence the reason why it's light over there, because you're in a different time zone. Okay. What time of day is it for you over there at the moment then?
It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh, lovely. And it looks like it's a really lovely day as well. It looks like you've got the sun streaming in.
Yeah, we just had a storm come through and it's cleared up a little bit. So sunlight's coming through and I'm not liking it too much. I've been up to 2 this morning, so.
Oh, excellent. good stuff.
We are the microbrew capital of the U.S., so I did get a beer, which is called Burr.
Excellent.
That would be suitable here at the moment because it's getting cold in Stockholm.
Yeah, and so Portland is the microbrewery of capital of the US, is it? Have you got loads of little brewers and kind of microbrewers making beer around there?
Yeah, tons. Breweries everywhere.
And that bottle you've got there, that's one of the local brews, is it, from Portland?
Yes.
Oh, fantastic. I wish I was there. I like the idea of being very in close proximity to John. We may well need to move the show.
we can take a trip to America, especially for microbreweries. That's a good reason to go.
Definitely. Don't they hold one of the big Linux conferences in Portland or very near? One of the annual conferences.
We hold OSCON, which is the open source convention. That's the big Linux thing that we do. There's a little Linux Fest in Washington, which is closer to Seattle. I think I haven't been to it yet because I just moved to this neck of the woods, but there's a lot of Linux activity here.
Yeah, that's that's really good because there's also I looked at this before and my memory gives me away now. They have something called the Thrift Shop and something else there, and it's kind of like a social enterprise business that takes in PCs and refurbishes them and supplies them back into the community. And do you know what I'm talking about, Scarlett?
I don't, but it sounds wonderful. I'll have to look into it.
I'll do some googling in a bit and see if I can find it. But I'm absolutely sure that's in Oregon. It's called Is it Free Geek?
Free Geek is here. Yes, they're here.
That's it. Yeah. It's really good. That's excellent what's going on over there. John, we need a PayPal button on the website. So viewers, what we need you to do is we need you to, when John puts the PayPal button up on the website, give us your money. And we will go over to OSCON in Oregon and we'll hook up with Scarlett and we'll bring you a show if we haven't drunk too much of the local microbrew beer.
And just to make it clear, we're going to pay for the flights ourselves. The PayPal button is just for all the beer when we get there.
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, let's have a chat with Jonathan for a moment and see whereabouts you are. Jonathan, whereabouts in the world are you coming to us from?
I've recently moved from Scotland to Barcelona. Barcelona being the capital of Catalonia. And kind of like a democratic Vladimir Putin, I love playing with the geopolitics of the world. So Scotland, we tried to create a new country there, but the bankers got the way and it didn't quite work out. So now we're trying again in Catalonia. We're going to have a vote in next month to create a new country and to entirely mess up the whole of European politics. It's good fun.
Fantastic. This sounds really good. So, I mean, I was a bit disappointed. In fact, I was not disappointed. I was nigh on stunned, actually, completely stunned that the Scottish independence vote didn't get the yes vote. Obviously, this is the wrong show. See my other show for EU politics, but this is the wrong show for that. But yeah, there's something going on here then, isn't there? I mean, you clearly weren't obviously happy with the lack of independence in Scotland, so you've gone over to Catalonia. Do you really think they're going to get away with it? I was thinking Mr. Barroso and Mr. Schultz were none too pleased about this idea of a breakaway Catalonian state, and they're largely having none of it, Jonathan.
And it's quite different from what happened in Scotland, in that in Scotland, the UK government said, all right, we'll let you try, and by the way, you'll all lose, you'll go bust, and you can't do it, you're too small, and people agreed with that. In Catalonia, the Catalonians are all poor, people out in the street every week, thousands, hundreds of thousands of them, but the central government in Madrid, they say, no, you can't do that, because heaven forbid you should vote on your democracy. And so it's not going to happen. They've sent the riot police are sitting outside town to make sure that this referendum next month doesn't happen. And if it does, then it could well be anarchy. It's going to be fun.
Spoken like a true Scotsman. I mean, I'm assuming there by your accent that you are a Scotsman. But this is the kind of thing a Scotsman would do: get right to the front of the battle for independence and just out in the streets.
In a peaceful way, demonstrating to make sure those cads in Madrid won't stop us from having our say.
Yeah, well, I think that's quite right. And I've been following the what's been going on with obviously the main Spanish government in Madrid, and I mean there's a huge amount of European influence there because of the financial shenanigans and so on and so forth. But I find it quite shocking actually that the Spanish government has so far been able to get away with the idea of denying the people of Catalonia any sense of democracy. It's absolutely bonkers. What's needed is more media coverage and more attention drawn to it, and protest, peaceful protest, will hopefully achieve that.
What is it that China said recently? It's like they can't understand why you let people have a vote if you don't know how they're going to vote. That was their response to the Scottish referendum. It's like, I don't understand why you let them vote if you don't already know the answer.
The main danger in Catalonia is that the central government know full well how the Catalonians would vote, and that's why they don't want to give them a vote.
And of course, just on the topic of technology, I mean, I'd been following quite a few years ago what had been going on in Catalonia, and there's a huge amount of open source usage over there. Don't they have their own educational Linux distribution that the Catalonian provincial government sort of sponsored or put something together?
Actually, I don't know, but I know that every region in Spain pretty much has their own Linux distribution of some sort. I haven't been involved in the one in Catalonia, but I have been invited out to the Canary Islands, where they run Kubuntu on all the local government computers there, and the university runs Kubuntu on their computers there. So it's very nice having all these important invitations out to Tenerife to go and sun ourselves on the beach while obviously fixing all their bugs.
Well, I mean, that's very encouraging as well, because of course the city of Munich, I'd been following the city of Munich since about 2001, 2002, because their migration has taken a long time. But it's somewhat unspoken, but the city of Munich are also using Kubuntu on their desktops in their public sector government ministry as well, aren't they?
Yes, and that's a really nice story there, because it's in the nature of free software that we often don't know who actually uses our software. But in Munich, the developers there, they hang out on our IRC channels, and they come to the Kiddy Academy conference, and they invite us to come and have a sprint in Munich, which we will do next month. So there's really nice collaboration there and good spirit. And if they have a problem, they can tell us about it, and we can get feedback from them, and it works really nicely.
Yeah, I mean, I think sort of about 10 years ago, I suppose, and when I was kind of really pushing really in enterprise desktop stuff and working on kind of waving the flag for free and open source software, I used to talk a lot about the Munich case studies and about what was going on there, because, you know, it was it's a great testimony for Linux and open source in general, of course for LibreOffice and the work that they've done there, and of course now for Kubuntu on the desktop. So it's really great to see that those implementations working just working so well. It really shows you the power of collaborative working together, and when the community is working with enterprise, how successful that can be.
And as an economic story, that worked really well as well, because it was initiated by Microsoft dropping support for some version of NT or XP or whatever, and the technology people said, well, we could spend however many million pounds on the new version of Windows, or we could spend a few million pounds on making our own Linux distribution. So they did that, and they calculated that they saved about £100 million on Windows licenses. And it cost a few £10 million in order to develop it and deploy it, but of that £10 million, the money stays within Munich, so that then comes back to the government in terms of taxes and the local economy. So in terms of just adding up the money, it works really well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the case study there shows and demonstrates that, you know, not only have they ended up with probably a more flexible and well-wrapped solution around the Munich business use case, but the economic factors and the development factors for utilizing local providers, local contractors, and all of those kinds of things just makes it a really good representative story. And it's not the only one. You know, you have the gendarmerie in France, and here in the UK, there's been a significant deployment of Linux and open source software systems throughout Kent Police as well. These things don't seem to get hardly any media attention at all. You know, most people know very little about them, but actually deployment of open source software is a lot more prevalent than people think, and it's being used very, very, very successfully in many places.
People are shy about publicizing it. For example, the one in Munich, it becomes a political tool, and the newly elected mayor of Munich, because he didn't have anything better to do, he complained that his mobile phone didn't quite work with it, and so he said, oh, we should scrap this idea and just go with Windows 10, and it became a big political football. And there's actually nothing there, nobody's got any problems, it's not going to disappear, but it was a bit of a political story a few months ago. And I know that Central Scotland Police, they put KDE on all their computers 1 year, and it works out really smoothly, and it works out really well. And then I went back a couple of years later, and they changed it back to Windows. And I have no idea what on earth Microsoft managed to lean on them to make them do that, because it must have cost millions and millions of pounds to change back to Windows. But they will have some way of leaning on the politicians and the civil servants in order to convince them to go with the Microsoft stuff. So that makes me think, you often don't want to publicize it too much, else Microsoft will hear of it and use their previous tactics.
Well, do you know, that's absolutely very true. I mean, for quite a while, I had a lot to do with the open source consortium here in the UK, which was all to do with trying to work and leverage public sector understanding and also public sector policy on open source. And we've got a consortium of somewhere in the region of about 100 plus independent consultants or companies that were working across the UK, kind of tied together to drive this forward. And one of the cases was, I'm going to mix this up, whether it was Newark or Newbury, but you know, this was again a situation whereby I think Newbury were going to do some work with removing Microsoft licenses and going to open source. And I know Mark Taylor, who was working with me at the Open Source Consortium running Sirius out in London, had been instrumental in doing that. And the deal that Microsoft gave Newbury was, you know, they almost gave the software away for nothing. The point being that it was so important to maintain that enterprise stronghold for Microsoft and not allow that marketing to take place for open source. Let's move on a little bit and move forward, because I could chat like this about these topics for forever. But we've got some news to be getting on with, and I wanted to bring this one in actually, because whilst showing in my new role, whilst talking to our sysadmin at the company and explaining to him what KDE activities are and why they're awesome, we got to talking about systemd. And of course, there's controversy in the open source community at the moment with the use of systemd in Debian, and even talk of a Debian fork. John, can you, I mean, I'm stunned, but there is actually a website, debianfork.org, where the conversation is talking about you know, possibly forking Debian if the Debian team don't mend their ways, so to speak, with their view on systemd. Points of view, folks, what do we think? I should direct that question, shouldn't I, really?
I guess maybe a good starting point is to give a tiny bit of background, perhaps, for our listeners.
Yeah, okay.
I'm aware that maybe not everyone that listens to the show and talks about beer will instantly go, ah, systemd in Kubuntu, I know exactly what that is.
Okay, right, fair enough. All right, so, well, so in kind of, so the way that the Linux operating system boots up from first startup when you switch it on, it traditionally is booted up using a system called init, or sysv init. That was the name of it, and it was basically a series of run level scripts from the kernel beginning its process and then starting up a series of scripts that run the various services, bring up the networking, bring up the other services that you need, and bring you all the way to the desktop. And and that sysv init system was developed and built in traditional kind of Unix Zen fashion, so simple orthogonal pieces of code that did specific jobs to get the system from startup, boot up, through to the desktop or server instance or whatever you wanted to do. But I think, for me, now this is my personal take on it, I think the pursuit of Linux on the desktop had seen that that I think there was this pursuit for rapid boot speeds, to be able to get something in front of the user as quickly as possible, perhaps put a splash screen in place. We looked at other ways of booting the system and getting it started up, and systemd is one of those tools. So basically you're changing the boot structure and implementing systemd. So this is a change that's been implemented in Debian and taken forward. Which I think to most users and most average users of the software system, largely, they see no significance to it at all. But there is a big faction of the Debian development community, and certainly many, many system administrators, that are deeply disgruntled at this, because they feel that systemd in itself breaches some of the Unix Zen philosophy of making everything, all things should be files, that your streams should be text orientated, and that you should have a lot of orthogonality so that things do independent jobs. And of course, systemd is more, it doesn't take that kind of philosophy. It uses a binary logging system and so on and so forth. And I think they feel that that takes away some of the accessibility from being able to maintain it and being able to develop upon it. And this has caused a tremendous amount of friction in the Debian community. So does that put a bit more scope on it, John?
Definitely, yes. I'm used to poking around with initd, but I haven't really heard of systemd myself. So that's good for me and our listeners, which is cool.
Well, there's some more background, which is that 6-7 years ago, everyone was going, initd, it's old and it's past its best just because it's slow. And it's entirely reasonable that when you turn on your computer, you want to get to the desktop fast. And so Canonical wrote Upstart as a replacement for that. And that was, it was really good and it was really nice, and we still use it. And then systemd came along as a competitor, and it was perfectly good and it was perfectly nice. But because Canonical is not that great, or just actually doesn't build communities around the projects that it writes, Upstart didn't get taken on by any other distributions or anybody else. And Systemd also had this nasty or nice habit of doing a lot more than just the boot system. So for a description of what Systemd is, you can't actually describe what it does, because it's a collection of quite different things. It handles login, and it handles the time, and it handles your DNS and various other random middleware parts of the system. But because it's made by Red Hat, who know how to do community really well, it got taken on by some other distributions. And so when Debian were looking, well, what do we replace initd with? Because everybody else has replaced it, maybe we should as well. The choices were Upstart or Systemd, and they went with Systemd because after an awful lot of Debian style debating, which is not always the most pleasant way to debate, because it's got traction with the other distributions, because it's becoming the norm for everybody else to use. And so in Kubuntu, we were going, oh, jings, we're going to be left as the only distribution that doesn't use Systemd. So when parts of KDE start to depend on Systemd, for example, setting a time, then how are we going to do that? Oh, it's not going to work. So fortunately, Ubuntu announced when Debian changed, okay, we'll change Ubuntu as well. We'll drop the Upstart that we wrote and go with what everybody else is using. So that's going to make our life an awful lot easier.
Cool.
Excellent. Okay, so well, that's given us kind of both sides of the argument. I know, talking to my sysadmin just today, actually, about this issue, and he was ranting, really. I think that's probably the right word. He was ranting at me in the canteen about how disgruntled he was at Systemd, and I'm very upset with it, and I'm fully supportive of the Debian fork. So, you know, I think this is one of these stories that's going to roll for a little while longer as the community tries to resolve it. But I think
people grumble about it, but I don't think there's going to be a Debian fork. Nobody's ever successfully done a Debian fork. There have been hundreds of attempts and loads of Ruby projects that continue and go on, but the only fork that has gotten any traction is Ubuntu, and nobody else has ever managed to get a successful fork, so I really don't think that's ever going to happen.
Well, in other news, of course. Now, this came across my desk just the other day. But did anybody see this announcement from Samsung about this 802.11ad, which is this new Wi-Fi thing that they've just announced and released, which is basically giving speeds of up to 7.5 gigabits over the Wi-Fi network? Did you hear anything about that, John? Have you seen the news on that?
When you say John, that's not overly explicit in this conversation.
I would use Jonathan if I was
cool.
If I was talking there, I'm gonna go on, John. What do you think?
So there was a brief whittering around the office about the super fast Wi-Fi recently, and obviously my first reaction was cool. I love to see technology moving forwards, and then my the other half of me is thinking, but I still can't get 10 megabits per second at home through my broadband router, even though it's advertised as 100. I guess it will be really cool for people who are streaming, and you've written this down, and I think the primary use case I could see was streaming HD video, but going one tiny step further in streaming games. One thing that I've been playing with a reasonable amount over the last few months is that obviously if you have a PlayStation 4, then you can play that from anywhere around your house. But equally, if you've got an NVIDIA GPU, which I know you do after the last show, then you can actually stream that to, at the moment, certain NVIDIA devices. But also if you do it through Steam, then you can actually stream your Steam games to any other Steam box around your house, including the Steam Linux distribution, Steam OS. So the idea is you can have your game running on your beastly game machine, which might be in your office, but actually you want to play it on your television, and you've got a Linux box sitting under your television, which you can use for streaming videos, but also playing your games. So you'd have a wireless controller hooked up to your SteamOS box. And I guess really any Linux distribution that will run Steam will offer the same, but they've obviously forked I don't know what and made their own. And yeah, I think this super fast Wi-Fi would be really cool for that, because it's still, again, they promise so much things, and you buy a £140 router with tons of RAM and CPU power so it can handle it. And it's still a bit choppy sometimes, and you think, oh, come on. I just want to play my game on a different monitor without having to move my massive box around the house. So I guess for that, it could be really cool. That's, as a gamer, that's where I see its biggest potential. But I expect Jonathan and Scarlett probably see it in a different way.
Unless you're also... use that developers would have for it is distributed compiling. So we have a KDE office in Barcelona, and there's about 5 or 6 people. And if they want to compile Qt, that's a massive code base, and it takes hours and hours to do it on your computer. But you can use Ice Cream or another distributed compiler to send off the compile jobs onto the computer there, and it'll compile 5 times faster. But that's too slow to do over Wi-Fi, then you don't get any gain. So everybody has to use wired connection, and that's a bit of a pain if they want to walk away from the desk. But it would be quite nice to do that in an office situation where you have distributed compiling.
I could see that being quite cool at kind of coding jams and things as well. If you're getting together in a coding jam and you're jamming on something that's already big, it's kind of cool that you could just set that up in the background, and then you're spending, you know, just 2 full days working on Qt stuff. Then you don't have the option to plug network cables into everyone's laptops. So.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
So what does Scarlett think about 8 gigabit Wi-Fi to your mobile phone, and what's the internet backbone like where you are? What's your internet connection coming into that? Because that sort of struck me as being, yeah, great, 8 gigabits, but what's going to feed that? But yeah. What's your take on it, Scarlett? What do you think?
It sounds lovely, but the internet here is just horrible. It cuts out all the time. I don't know if it's my neighborhood or what, but I've not had good internet anywhere in any state.
I think here in Exeter we'd need to pull up all of the fiber cable into the city and plug it just into that one Samsung router and then throw everybody else off.
Yeah, supposedly we're getting a shot at Google Fiber. We'll see. I hope so. That would be nice.
Oh yeah, that would be really, really good. The Google Fiber is a gigabit, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really fast.
Yeah, that'd be really good.
We did apply. We were up in the top 5 running. I haven't heard anything since, but we'll find out. I hope so. Crosses fingers.
That lets 55 teenagers BitTorrent and leaves you with your average 1 megabit per second again.
Oh, how true is that? How true is that? Well, I have a note here on security news as well, and this joke's probably going to fail me terribly, but I'm going to put it in here just because I couldn't resist it. I just thought to myself, who says this? But apparently the security, I saw something go across my desk, and some of the NetOps, the network operations guys, were getting very excited about Security Poodle. And I said to the guys, well, you know, like my neighbor down the road, he had a Labradoodle for a while, but it was rubbish at security. I mean, it gave any intruder a jolly good licking. what do we know about this poodle thing, John?
Not much, to be honest. This is one that slipped by me, so I'm going to need you to fill me in on this one, Rick.
I don't know too much about it. Probably something to do with SSL or something like that. I don't know, some kind of certificate. Certificate thing or something. I mean, I'm only put it in the show notes because I just kind of thought I'd try and get a cheap laugh.
Well, it would have probably got more laughs, but we all read that on your show notes like 15 minutes ago. So, you know, it's kind of hard to have a punchline when it's already been read. But no, I do. I did remember this popping up on the side. It might even, you know, Stack Overflow or something a few days ago, and I said I should definitely read about that before next Thursday, and that was about as much as I did.
So in other news, of course, Kubuntu have released Utopic Unicorn 14.10. Hooray! And we've got Jonathan and Scarlett here to tell us more about that. So how's the release gone then, guys?
As far as I can tell, it's gone smooth. I haven't had anybody complain to me so far.
I haven't either.
It's been a fairly stressful couple of days in terms of, I found that the release upgrade notification didn't work, and the whole Plasma 5 image wouldn't log in. So yes, there were a few last minute pitches, but I think I managed to. We've been able to solve the main ones.
The Plasma 5 image wouldn't log in, right? So well, no, do you know I missed that because I downloaded the ISO for Plasma 5. When you announced it, Scarlett, when you announced that that latest build was available. And I booted that on a VM, and it worked. It worked absolutely beautifully, apart from a tiny little crash bug that me and another chap in IRC managed to replicate by going up and down the menus. But it was working. The Plasma 5 stuff was working really, really well for me. When did this bug creep in? Did it get in between that ISO that you built, Scarlett, and release?
It didn't happen to everybody. It was like corner cases, I guess, because I know with my desktop, I have an NVIDIA card, and it was very problematic.
Yeah, I saw your posts on that on the mailing list.
I couldn't get it SDDM to work at all. It just crashed and burned. So then I had to install LightDM, which of course pulled in half of Unity and GNOME, which was lovely. What I ended up, because it's the NVIDIA driver, which we have absolutely no contact with. We don't have any control over it. There's nothing we can do about it. And they pull in their choices are GDM, KDM, or Unity Greeter. There's no SDDM on there, so as a possible allowed login manager, which was problem number one, I ended up just downloading the driver off of the NVIDIA website and applying it to the kernel myself, and then ditching LightDM and all of Unity and and put SDDM on there, and now it works beautifully. I have absolutely no problems. Another gentleman had an issue that I don't know, Jonathan, were you able to help him out? I think he ended up deciding just to go with a clean install, but it was a weird error message that I had not seen before. It was doing some weird stuff. Basically trying not using Upstart. I think it was trying to use systemd. That's what it looked like to me. But
yes, and probably if you use non-standard leaf things like that, then you will find these corner case bugs. Our Plasma 5 image is a technical preview because we know it integrates some new technologies and it replaces some bits. And so we expect the integration not to be 100% smooth, especially during the release process. The development process hasn't been 100% smooth. So people who have been wonderfully helpful in testing it out over the last 6 months will have come across issues like that. Hopefully the version that we released today is relatively safe and good enough for any technical-ish person to use, but we're still calling that version a technical preview because we expect more problems to occur. To make themselves apparent, and we have the normal Plasma 4 image as our stable and image that we advise for everybody to use if they don't want to be testing new and potentially untried different technologies.
What's the worst that can happen? That's what I always say. But, maybe it would be a good idea maybe just to give a quick rundown of Ubuntu 14.10 for our listeners. Is that cool?
Well, the big change is that we have these two different editions because KDE is transitioning from KDE Libraries 4 to a new version of the underlying platform to Qt 5 and KDE Frameworks 5. And so the desktop has a whole new version of the Shiny Plasma desktop that KDE comes with. But it's being a new version, much of it is rewritten. It's got new technologies. So we're calling that a technology preview now. People who like the craft today, people who like to try new stuff, please try it out, give us feedback, let us know what works or what doesn't work. If you just want to get on with your life and aren't fussed about your widgets on desktop, then stay with the stable stuff.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, I've used it briefly a little bit, as I say, from the build that Scarlett did, and I've got that running on my desktop at work, and I used it for a good couple of days, really, just doing different things, and I really liked it very much. It really is quite different in the overall sort of look and feel and aesthetically on the eye. The functionality is, you know, still just as you would expect from KDE. So, you know, from knowing your way around KDE 4, you can find your way around the Plasma preview quite quickly. But it does look very, very different. Maybe I'm a little bit resistive to change in some ways, but there's quite a lot of slickness, and the graphics look just really kind of, it's starting to look really quite polished. But I struggled with the change from KDE 3 to KDE 4 and trying to get my head around that. And I've just about reached the point where I actually understand activities, KDE activities really well, and I can use them actually in a productive way. And of course, you know, it's kind of change again, so there's a little bit of catching up to do there. But I'm certainly going to do some more work with the Plasma 5. Stuff just if for no other reason, just to kind of put it through its paces on a day-to-day basis, using it as a daily desktop, just to see, you know, how it stands up, and see whether I can break anything, and obviously, you know, if I do, I'll raise a few bugs.
Excellent. The change from KDE 3 to 4, that was quite a big rewrite in terms of the whole parts of KDE, and 4.0 was not the most stable version out there. So when the KDE team were looking to change from KDE 4 to Plasma 5 and other parts of the 5 technology, they didn't make a wholesale change. Not every application is changing. We've done the libraries first, the platform first, and then the Plasma desktop, and then the applications are still to come. And it's a lot more shiny because we can write stuff in Qt Quick, which allows for things to slide and swoosh across the screen, as people expect, using modern phones and whatnot. I've had that for a few years. But the workflows are all much the same. We're not changing the whole layout of the desktop in the way that certain other desktops are doing, because the desktop works as it is, and there's no particular reason to change it.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Well, look, we're going to get we've got another more deeper segment where we're going to get much more into the Kubuntu community, find out a little bit more about what you guys are doing as developers, and we've got a bunch of questions for you. But what I want to do is just try to drive the segue forward a little bit here. So I'm going to push us into the app reviews section. Now I've got to, and I'm going to come to Jonathan. You were just talking about KDE and about the Plasma 5 stuff, and I know that you've got an app that you're going to tell us a little bit more about, and I'm really keen to hear more about this because I'm going to use this. So Jonathan, can tell us a little bit more about KDE Connect.
KDE Connect is a very nifty program that makes your laptop computer, like the one in front of me here, talk to your Android mobile phone, like the one over here. And many of us spend all day with our computer at the desk, and the phone sitting next to us. and they don't connect at all. So Kinney Connect lets them share features and do joint functionality. So when you get a phone call on your mobile phone, you'll get a notification on your desktop of who's the phone call coming from, or when you get a text message, that will pop up as a notification on the phone, on the desktop. It just works over Wi-Fi. It's really easy to connect the two together. When you're talking on your phone, it will turn off the music on your computer so that you don't have to bother doing that when at the same time as you're answering the call. But you can also use this as a remote control for your computer. So at my home, I have a projector to watch television from, but the projector is way behind me and the laptop is connected to the projector way over there. And I have no way of controlling that without getting up and walking over there. But using Kinney Connect on my Android phone, I can play and pause and go to the next video and backwards from my phone. And a future version will allow you to use your phone just as a touchpad for the mouse control to control the mouse from the computer. So it works really, really nicely. You can share files with it. You can share the clipboard with it. So if you get a URL on your text message, then you can just share it onto your desktop computer to watch it to read the web page in a big browser. And stuff that's coming up would be, if you walk away from your computer, then it's planned that it will lock the computer when you walk away automatically. Or you can print items from your phone through the printer connected to your desktop computer. And it's a relatively open standard, so there's an iPhone version in the works, and if anybody wants to maintain the iPhone version, I know that developers are looking for a maintainer for the iPhone version.
John Wordsworth, do you want to be the KDE Connect maintainer for iOS?
Might take a look at that. I do like a bit of iOS development. Don't shoot me, people. sounds quite cool.
So, I wonder whether this would solve my use case problem. I've got a Samsung tablet, Galaxy Tab 7, so it's a phone and a tablet together, the 7-inch thing, and I do all of my videos and all of my photographs on it, you know, photographs of the children and everything, and I've got loads and loads of them on there. And at the moment, because I don't have a Windows computer anywhere, so the only computer I can plug that into is my Ubuntu machine, and I've just not been able to successfully get it to do the MTP connection and to read the Samsung device. It just always complains, and to be honest, I didn't spend too much time trying to solve that problem because I just thought that Samsung have probably done something odd and proprietary with it, and it just isn't going to work without their piece of Samsung software. So the only way that I can get pictures and a video off my phone at the moment is to allow it to synchronize up to Google and then download it from Google. So would KDE Connect solve this problem? Could I get my pictures and my video off this and into Ubuntu?
Yep, that should all work very simply, and the user interface on the phone is fits in just nicely, so it's not a separate application. It's if you're looking through the photo album on your phone, and there's a share button, and you can share it from Twitter or Facebook, you can share it from KDE Connect, and it will come through on your laptop computer.
So to get this up and running then, Jonathan, what do we need to do? Do we need to get an application from the Google Play Store and then install something from the Software Center on Ubuntu?
Yes, exactly. You need to install from Google Play, KDE Connect on there, and from Muon Software Center, Muon Discover, install it on your KDE desktop, and the two will find each other over Wi-Fi, and you just click Connect and it'll work.
Cool.
And what about, I've got a KDE Ubuntu laptop, which I kind of cart around with me. I've got this workstation here, and then I've got Ubuntu on my office PC at work. If I installed KDE Connect on all three of those, can I have my phone just connecting to those, to each of those, depending on when I'm in proximity to it?
Yep, it's multiple different devices, and it will work out whatever the closest one is and talk to that.
Very awesome.
starts making you think, doesn't it, about all the other applications you can start adding.
And once you start to use it, you will miss it when it's gone, because maybe you put your phone on silent, so somebody calls you and you don't know it's happened because you don't want to disturb other people. But I just have a pop-up notification on my desktop. Oh, I'm being called. Answer it. Or there's an SMS. And a future version will let you reply to SMS messages directly from your desktop, from the telepathy KDE into the messaging client.
It's really cool.
So from your desktop, you'll be able to reply to a text message coming in straight from your desktop, and it'll just fire it out on your phone?
Yeah. Or hopefully a WhatsApp message or a Telegram message, whatever messaging system you're using on your phone, you can use it on your computer as well.
Sold. I'm installing it tomorrow. That's just what I need. That sounds fantastic. Are you using this as well, Scarlett? Are you using KDE Connect? Have you used it?
I haven't used all the features that he just mentioned. I actually didn't know it had that many features, but yeah, I've used the file sharing part of it and the notifications, and I like it. Yeah, it's simple to use.
And what's John, what's your take on it? I mean, you obviously using OS X and iPad and iPhone and stuff, you've got a lot of integration between the devices there. But what do you make of what Jonathan's described? I personally think it sounds awesome, but what's your take on it?
I think it's really cool. So I guess it's kind of this year's thing, right? I mean, it kind of kicked off with Apple and their continuity, and that's kind of, I think, got people thinking about this a lot more, maybe, you know, like, not that it hasn't been thought of before, but I think it's brought it into the forefront of people's minds. So it's really cool to see these features coming to Android. And I think the benefit that this has over Apple's locked-in system, and obviously Apple's system, I think at the moment is slightly ahead, which is cool. But I think that this has the potential to do a lot more stuff in the long run, with given the open platform of Android. So with iOS, even with something like this, I guess you're still going to be locked into what they allow you to do. Whereas Android's a lot more free and open, so I think that there's a lot more potential. And I guess, you know, you can just even think that perhaps someday there could be screen sharing and stuff in it if you ever needed to go back to your PC and just quickly use your PC from your device while you're somewhere else. And you can just have a little VNC client and stuff in there. So I think this has a lot more potential in the long run. I think it sounds really cool, really interesting project. But I can say it's definitely really cool being able to have your phone in my man bag. And then when you get a text or phone call, I mean, those are the two primary things that it's really cool to be able to do from your PC. So I think it's awesome that there's a solution for Android now.
Yeah, I one of the things that I saw in the KDE Connect, I watched a little video on YouTube, and this was amazing. I was so impressed with this. The guy opened up his phone and to the web browser, put something in the web browser, and then just pressed a button on his phone, and it just fired up the browser on his desktop and just put it straight to the right page. And then he went into the URL and he added something else in the URL. And as he typed it in the URL, it came up in the browser. And it was just like, I just thought, wow, that is so cool.
Because obviously, like, Apple have done maybe seven things. There's seven continuity features and they're all solid. But then you start thinking, but what if it did number 8 and 9 and 10? Whereas with this solution, you can just go home and code it. or get someone else to code it if that's not your bag. But so that's really cool.
Yeah, I'm going to have some fun in the office because they've been a bit. I think they've had a bit of a shakedown since I started in my new job. Because the first thing they did was they gave me this Windows laptop and said that I wasn't allowed to. So the first question I asked was, can I dual boot it? Can I load a different operating system on it? And it was policy that we couldn't do that. So I said, okay, can I put VirtualBox on it? Yes, they said. So the first thing I did was download Kubuntu and install that in VirtualBox. It didn't even touch anything in Windows at all. Got that set up. And one of the first people to ask me some questions was one of the sysadmin guys. So I started showing him a little bit about activities and about some of just some of the cool features. And I mean, when you can drive a KDE desktop, well, if you've been using it for a while, it is just so powerful. And it's got such a lot of just amazing features that just make it so, so useful. So I was kind of showing off that a little bit. And as I did that, a couple of the developers came past. And one of them started talking to me and about bits and pieces. So I opened up KDevelop. And so I had KDevelop on there and started telling them about KDevelop and this, that, and the other. And of course, much of the office, they've got Windows 8. And you see them with the Windows 8 clocks and this, that, and the other. I can't wait. Next week, I'm going to be going in and I'm just going to be picking up my phone and just doing when it's going to be, we're going to be firing stuff on the desktop and this, that, and the other. And when they start asking me questions, I'm just going to go, well, you know, you guys need to stop messing about with this toy time rubbish and get some proper software. it's going to be good. Okay. Well, thank you very much for that app review, Jonathan. That was really good. And I'll let you'll have another user of that tomorrow. Now, what I've got here is this isn't really an app as such, because we did the last show about this, I've been saving this, John, and Scarlett and Jonathan, I've been saving this, and you do not know how hard it has been to not open this Gigabyte NVIDIA GeForce GTX 970. But
I can't believe you haven't opened it yet, because you posted about it a week ago on Google Plus, didn't you?
I did.
On an iRacing thing, so I just thought, I know you said you were going to unbox it on air, but there's no way. There's no way you can not have it out of the box for a week.
No, I have. Our listeners and viewers are so important to me, John, and all five of them, that I've saved this. I've saved this specially for them. So I'm just going to basically pop the box open here, and I really hope that I don't damage this. And then we'll take a quick look inside. And then, of course, what I'm going to do over the weekend is I'm going to fit this thing into my PC, and then I'm going to take it out around the Nürburgring for a good spin. Now, what I can tell you, first of all, is that this, you know, everything is getting kind of Apple when it comes to box craziness. Like, you know, no longer do things come in like tatty cardboard boxes. This is really polished, and inside here is like another black case box which is kind of very slick. Let me see if I can get. Oh yeah, okay. This is, it could actually be a pair of shoes. Can you see this? It's got like, you know, they've taken a leaf out of Mr. Jobs's book when it comes to packaging things, and we've got a nice little Gigabyte fold there,
My NVIDIA Shield tablet came the same way with all the embossed lettering and the shiny glossy edges.
So nice bit of foam inside here, and then the main event. Here's the main event. I better not drop that.
Could be toes in the Subway still, couldn't it? Just a cheese.
What I want to know is, this is not funny, you know, guys, because I ordered a pizza. So look, more on this Gigabyte board, and of course also more news from iRacing.com as well, which is, as you know, I don't play games. I only drive a simulator. It's not a racing game, it's a simulator. But iRacing.com have just done their new release, and which has got a bunch of features in it. And we'll probably do something separate on that, and I'll tell you a bit more about about a whole bunch of things that they've done. But I'll save that for another show, John, and I'll come back and bring more news on how this card performs once I've had a chance to test it and have a go at it. But there it is, Gigabyte GeForce GTX 970 unboxed.
We're jealous.
Exclusively for At Random Show.
I think
does it have the GPL decoration in the box? Does it have Linux drivers with the GPL decoration? Or is it evil pirated proprietary software trying to take away your freedom?
Yes, that's quite right, Jonathan. It is. It is proprietary software absolutely trying to take away my freedom. And as Scarlett attested to earlier on, the only way to make this work is to download some obfuscated binary blob and plug that into the kernel. And to make matters even worse, and this is shameful because I said I don't have a Windows PC. Well, of course, I do have a Windows PC, but it's not a PC, it's a simulator. And so behind me, I have my Windows 7 gaming machine, and that's what this piece of hardware is going to go in to. And that machine is dedicated to running iRacing. It doesn't. I don't do anything else with it at all because, frankly, well, Windows is useless for anything else. So why would I? But all is not lost. Because having had difficulties with my Windows builds, where they do updates and break themselves and things like that, I needed a strategy for rescuing it. So what I did was I installed Windows, and then I installed Kubuntu onto it, and I used Kubuntu to snapshot the hard drives, and then I put some desktop scripts on top of Kubuntu that flash the images back onto the main hard drive. So every time Windows does an update, I just dual boot, log into Kubuntu, run the scripts, it flashes it back again, and it's been reliable ever since. So, you know, if you've got the tools to hand, it's amazing what you can achieve.
Awesome.
Okay, so well, Scarlett's got an app for us, and that's also equally uber awesome. And you're going to tell us a little bit about Console, Scarlett. So go ahead, tell us what is Console and what's great about it?
It's the KDE version of the terminal, and I live there. It is where I do all of my packaging. It's where I do... oh, just about everything. I've been using Linux since 1998, so I was kind of born on the terminal. We didn't have much of a UE back then. So I learned early on to do everything in the terminal. And Console is great at it. and Conversation is the other window that is perpetually up for
IRC. So Conversation being your IRC client, mm-hmm. That's not the default IRC client with KDE, though. The default IRC client's Quassel, isn't it?
I think that's a Kubuntu thing, the Quassel. I don't know. I always use Conversation. As soon as I install a Kubuntu, I apt-get install Conversation. I'm sure Quassel's great, but I just never got into it, so I just know how to use Conversation more.
I think we should direct that to Jonathan and ask him why Kubuntu has got Quassel by default instead of KDE's Conversation.
Slight critical question there. They're both great IRC clients, and I love them both, and they're both very, very usable. When we changed from KDE 3 to KDE 4, there was no KDE 4 release of Conversation, and there was of Quassel. So we changed over to Quassel because that fitted in a bit nicer into the KDE 4 desktop. Possibly now we're changing to Plasma 5 and Qt5 technologies. There will be a Qt5 version of Conversation first, and we may change back. That's yet to be seen. But either program works great.
Yeah, I mean, I use Quassel because it's the default thing, and it works absolutely fine for me. So, but I don't have any particular preference, really, which one we use. So, if you decide to put your influence in there, Scarlett, and push Conversation, then just send me one of those beers over in a nice box, something like this Nvidia one, and I'll be perfectly happy to support you on that quest to get that. Integrated into Kubuntu. but let's go back to Console for a little bit. Console is my preferred shell or terminal that I use all the time on my desktop, and I've got a few reasons that I can think of why I just like it so much. But what are the key features in Console that you like? And give me some cool tips that I can use when I'm doing it, especially if it's like show off stuff.
The fact that you can copy and paste from the terminal to any application is cool. I know if I open up something other than console and I try and copy and paste and it doesn't work, I get a point.
I must admit, I like the copy and paste functionality, and that is once you get the hang of, once you get used to the fact that it's got that, it you use it a great deal. You know, I very often, like, I have an activity on the KDE desktop that's just dedicated to doing shell work, and so I'll have three or four or an array of consoles sitting up there doing different things, maybe shelled onto different boxes doing different things, and just being able to cut and copy and paste from one shell to the next and move things about. I really like that. That's a feature that I like a great deal. I love the fact that you've got bookmarks. You know, you can, because you've got the KDE interface across the top, you can bookmark. So you and can set your SSH servers and...
I love the tabs. You can have separate. I have separate tabs for, like, I have CH roots for all of my packaging for the different KDE4, Plasma 5, and I have different tabs labeled with which each CH root. But root I have open on each tab, and it makes for easy. I know where I am, what I'm doing, and in which window. That's one feature I use excessively is the tabs.
And on a historical note, console was the first application to have a tabbed interface out of any application on the desktop. Then Firefox nicked the idea and it took off, and now every desktop application uses it. But console was there first, and as a power user tool, it's not something to give to people who don't care about compiling programs. They shouldn't care about that. You shouldn't show them that, but people who use computers as a power tool, it works really well.
Cool. I have one little question about console. So I primarily work at the moment on, I've got two machines on my desk at work. I've got iMac sitting on the right-hand side and just a stock Ubuntu install on the left. It came with Windows, and they said you can either format it and put Ubuntu over the top, but you can install them side by side. So I formatted it and put Ubuntu over the top.
That's what we're talking about.
That's like,
no retreat, no surrender, John.
I just have the whole terabyte for Ubuntu, I'm sure. I'm never going to want Windows. But one of the things that I do notice, and it's such a minor thing, but so I switch from my Mac to Ubuntu, and obviously this is Ubuntu, so I'm not running console, I'm just running the standard terminal. But the one thing that I do miss is that when I resize a terminal window on my Mac, width-wise, all the line breaks and the carriage returns stay, you know, because it's like a text file, I guess. If you have a bunch of line breaks and then you make the window wider, then all the text above will expand out to the width of the window, and that doesn't happen on Ubuntu. Does it happen in console? If it does, you've got a sale. If it doesn't, I'm not surprised, because it... So,
Mine stretches out with the window.
So on Ubuntu, like all the new lines that get printed are then printed to the new width of the console. But then kind of all the lines that are printed, so you just got a massive pile of debug statements from a make, and you're like, I wish I could read them and they weren't squished into 80 characters. And you pull the width of the window out, and on Ubuntu they're still 80 characters wide up until the point you type your next command.
Yeah, I can fix that for you, John. what you need is, in fact, I'll put this in the show notes, right? What you just need to do is, if you just open that terminal on that you've got there on Ubuntu, and you just type sudo space apt hyphen get install kubuntu, and console does precisely what you say. If you stretch it out, it will, you know, it will reformat the page and do all that kind of stuff, and you will you'll never return to even a Mac terminal when you've seen the power of console. Once you get the tab console bit going on, and the copy and paste and the file bookmarking and the resizability, especially when you do So like on the KDE desktop, if you just grab your consoles and just drag them to the left and to the right of the screen, they'll automatically resize and fit. So if you want four consoles up, just drag one left top, one right top, right bottom, left bottom, and they'll all just fit, bang, 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 straight on the desktop, and away you go. You'll love it.
Too organized for me. I've just got a pile of about 7 or 8 overlapping windows at the moment. That's what I used.
Well then let me take away your pain. All you have to do, John, is just flick that mouse up into the top left hand corner, and it's just gonna drop all of the windows that you've got open and just splash them all over the screen so you can see exactly what you've got, and just click on the one you want, and it's gonna deliver it to your mitts, ready for you to go. I keep telling you this, John. You've got to come with me on this.
I don't know if, because we have our sort of fixed-ish development platforms at work, so I'll see if I can convince them that I should install Kubuntu on mine. I'm sure it won't really make a difference. They shouldn't care, but obviously we primarily build for Ubuntu, so...
That's good. Game company built. So you're building games that run on Kubuntu, not through the Steam engine. These are building to run natively on Ubuntu. Is that right, John?
So I guess where I work, we build games for all three. You know, so the idea is that all of our games should always compile every night on Windows, Mac, and Linux. So, but when we say Linux, we mean Ubuntu. but it's distributed through Steam. So. Theoretically, any platform that runs Steam will probably run our game, but officially, I think it's just. I mean, I've only been there for 2 weeks, so I'm kind of still testing, you know, getting a feel for it. But I think the semi-official line would be: if it works on Ubuntu, then it works on Linux.
Awesome.
But I guess that kind of fits with the paradigm that I suspect at the moment the majority of people who are gamers who are trying out Linux for the first time are probably going to stumble upon Ubuntu first. And just download that and see if their games work. So, I guess
from Kubuntu's point of view, Kubuntu is the same thing as Ubuntu, with just a different flavor, a different selection of packages, but exactly the same platform, exactly the same archetypes. And it's confusing because Ubuntu means two different things: one, the entire big Ubuntu project, and two, the Ubuntu Unity flavor, which happens to be the flagship part of that project. But it's deliberately confused between those two, but of course Ubuntu is a big platform, big friendly family that Ubuntu is part of. So if it runs on Ubuntu, then of course it will run on anybody running any other flavor.
Yeah, so you just switch the window manager out, right? So essentially. So I mean, that's a very simple, big simplification, but and I guess really we should make sure they work on other platforms, but having only been there for 2 weeks, I'm not quite at the stage yet where I can say we should test it on other things.
So, well, there you go. So, I mean, I think take that as I'd be convinced, but I understand, John, you know, having been there 2 weeks, you probably don't want to be rocking up and saying, what are you guys doing with this Ubuntu? Okay, get rid of that. Let me give you some power tools. I mean, well, maybe you might get away with it, but you might upset some people too. So we'll see.
Two more weeks.
Because Ubuntu is Ubuntu as well. It is the same thing. So it won't be controversial. It's an easy way to open their mind.
Baby steps.
Well, and of course you can. There's nothing stopping you installing console onto the Ubuntu, into Ubuntu. So you could do sudo apt-get install console. It'll bring in the KDE library dependencies and so on and so forth, but it'll leave you with the Unity desktop, and then you'd be able to fire up console and it'll run on top of the desktop. And you can do that too as well, because as Jonathan says, you know, you could just kind of mix and match the applications as you like, because it's all largely the same.
I'll definitely be doing that tomorrow. So that's the one thing that's been niggling at me the last. And again, like I say, it's silly how you get focused on the tiny things, but that resizing the window, and then I'm like, oh, I need to run another 6-minute make just to get the errors in a format I can read them.
Well, okay, so, well, console. So, well done, Scarlett. We've got another convert to console, because it is awesome. Okay, John, app reviews. What have you got for us, buddy?
Cool. Well, I'm going to keep mine really short and sweet because we want to move on to the real meat of the show, I guess. So I'm just going to really quickly say that I guess over the last kind of 9 months or so, I've been using Qt 5 and the Qt Creator IDE, and it's pretty damn awesome. So in my spare time, I tend to develop little tools. The idea is to make them open source, and then I get all protective over, not protective, I get like, well, my code isn't perfect, so I'm not going to put that online. So a couple of them have ended up online, and a couple of them are on my hard drive awaiting the I'll just make it better before I upload it thing. But overall, I think I found Qt a dream to work with, and I think it's really cool that when you come to the end of your project, that I can happily switch my project files onto any platform and just carry on working. And then at the end of it, with hardly any tweaks at all, be confident in the fact that I can just deploy it to all three major platforms. So it's kind of cool to be novel when you're making mod tools for games, because a lot of the time you'll download a game, and now that games are becoming more cross-platform, people who make the tools typically just sort of bashing something together really quickly, and therefore it's a Windows tool which they built probably with an illegal copy of Visual Studio, but don't. but it's really cool just to be able to build it in Qt Creator and then deploy it on all three platforms, and I think you end up with a really strong, solid app now. So I remember looking at Qt very briefly quite a long time ago. I didn't come away with quite a term, but now I think it's a really solid offering. So yeah, I just wanted to give a big thumbs up to Qt Creator.
It is one of the best developer platforms out there, and of course all the KDE software is written in Qt, and so one reason why as a developer I really like KDE is because it's got the best foundation, it's got the best platform, so that's going to hopefully result in the best end user software. And in terms of, I've heard, in terms of getting a job, Qt, because the Qt developers are three times more productive than an iPhone or an Android or a Windows developer, because you develop once, it goes everywhere, you get paid three times as much, which is great. it's pronounced Qt, it's one word. So it's a way to differentiate between somebody who's met another Qt developer in real life and somebody who hasn't, is that it's one word, it's just Qt, and it's a pun, it's a silly pun on it being C-U-T-E, it being a Qt development platform.
I have heard that quite a lot, but everyone at work calls it Qt still, so I'm like, I'm still in the falling in line thing at work, you know?
You can show them how it's done there.
John, you've got to, yeah, so when you go into work tomorrow, you've got to start talking about Qt Creator, because you're now Leet, you know? this is the differentiator, isn't it? Jonathan's just said it, you know? This is the differentiator, you know?
I'm now allowed to say it that way, you know? It's like...
I'm fairly sure that I've seen Qt Creator in the Muon Software Center. I think we can just install it straight from there on Kubuntu, can't we, Jonathan?
And it's used now by Canonical as the definitive software development kit for Ubuntu software, because they realize it's the best platform, so they've taken it too. And of course, it's used by KDE developers and by people who work out with KDE.
I'm going to have to install that and take a look at it then. I've been using KDevelop for quite a long time for a lot of the things that I do. And so of course, as a consequence, because I kind of found one tool that I really liked and I'd got into, I kind of kept seeing Qt Creator and just thinking, oh, I can't be bothered to learn another tool. I really like KDevelop. I want to stay there. But there we
are. A lot like the Quazon conversation chat we had earlier, there are two tools that are both very good at the job. They do much the same thing. And so if you are familiar with one, there's not any particular reason to switch over to another one. They're both good.
So I'm going to kick off with the first question for this deep thought section. And my question is this, which is that give us a summary of what Kubuntu Linux is, and how does this differ from Ubuntu?
Again, depends on what you're talking about in terms of Ubuntu. Ubuntu is a great big project. We're one of the various different flavors of it. We're the original and, I think, best community flavor from Ubuntu. We select the best software as made by KDE, and we put it on a disk. We ship it out to people. We make sure it all works together, that it upgrades successfully, that bugs get fixed, that there's a friendly community where people can get support and help. And we work very, very closely with upstream KDE, so we work with the developers directly, and we work in a very open source, bizarre development method, so we're very open to everybody to help out with it.
Fantastic. Okay, so, well, we've just had a release today, and of 14.10. So what's new? What can we look forward to? And why should we be downloading the latest distro or upgrading to the latest distro? What new features and what new goodies, what's new in this release? Scarlett?
I've been using it for a while, so I'm not sure what's exactly new, because it's old for me. Well, what did we? Yeah, Jonathan, I know we went with what 14.1,
14.10. Well, I mean, I downloaded the betas that you that were available, and I got that running up just for testing. In fact, actually, I pulled. You gave me it was super secret. So, but I managed to get hold of. I don't know. What was the version of the packages that you gave me with that super secret PPA that I'm not supposed to tell anybody about? Please don't shoot me, Jonathan.
there's nothing terribly secret about it. We developed in the Kubuntu Ninjas PPA, and we that's password restricted because we don't want people to be going, oh, it's we've got the shiny new stuff and it's all released and let's upgrade while we're still in development and it's untested. There may well be breakage and bugs. Upstream KDE gave us the tarballs to develop about a week or less or a few days before it gets released to the public so that Kubuntu can have it at the same time as KDE makes their announcement or the other distributions. And so we don't make it publicly available, but everybody is welcome to test. So join us in the #Kubuntu Devel IRC channel if you want to get a sneak preview of forthcoming software and you help us test.
Oh, so I'll paint the story for you. So I spend quite a bit of time in Kubuntu Devel in the IRC channel there, and Jonathan happened to just sort of nudge me the other day and say, "I've got this super secret PVA." And then I felt really privileged, thinking, wow, this is really cool. I'm going to set this up. And so I downloaded the beta ISO of Utopic, got it in, got the PPA in, got it up and running. And actually, I'm not really that special, Jonathan. No,
you are very, very special. And we only gave that software to you because we understand just how important and special you are to the project. It's just we also have many other special people to the project as well. and I find the more I flatter people with this kind of terminology, that the more they're likely to help out.
I mean, it wouldn't have been quite so special, would it, Rick, if we just went, here's another repository, just do what you like.
No, well, do you know, I mean, you're quite right. Both of you are quite right, because I probably wouldn't have taken the time to install it. And the worst thing about it was that, of course, I had the IRC private chat box up on my LTS 1404 running in a virtual machine. And in there was this really long string for the PPA, for Jonathan's PPA. And I installed the Utopic Beta in another virtual machine, and so what I did, I thought, right, cool, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to copy the PPA string and I'm going to open console and I'm just going to add this into the app sources. And then it dawned on me that I can't actually paste from one virtual machine to another. So to make this work, I had to sit and meticulously type all of those characters out, uppercase, lowercase, and all the different things, everything in that line to get it to work. So I spent quite a bit of time to get this super secret PPA loaded. And I was really pleased with it when it was up and running. I was very pleased. I felt really privileged with that. So you know, people out there, if you're listening to this, come and get involved in Kubuntu. Get on the IRC channel on Freenode, and get involved in kubuntu.devel, and shout Scarlett or Jonathan, and just give them a nudge and say, "Can I have the super secret PPA?" And you'll be sorted.
Cool. So there's a lot of flavors of Linux out there. Just out of interest, what got you guys hooked on Kubuntu specifically?
Community. Very, very friendly community. I have, like I said, I've been using Linux since 1998, so I've tried a few, one or two solutions. And I've been trying to get involved for years. And so many communities just weren't interested in me helping. They just shrugged, pointed me to a wiki, and then went on their merry way. When I started talking to Jonathan, he was very friendly and was sending me messages and notes. So I remember you saying you wanted to contribute. Are you still interested? I was going through something at the time, but as soon as I got more healthy, I reached out to Jonathan and said, yes, I'm interested. So one day he's like, would you like to learn how to package? And I was like, sure. So he fired up a EC2 thing and showed me how to package a package. And so then I found that, wow, this is really interesting. So I kept, you know, doing more on my own, and then he would review them. And then as I got stronger, better at doing it, I would, you know, just step by step by step, it just, here I am and absolutely loving it. And definitely the community, all the help that I have received with all the guys and gals in Kubuntu, it's just been wonderful. So for me, it's been a very good experience.
Cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Jonathan?
Ooh, well, about a decade ago, I was hanging around in London, and I heard of somebody who was working for a super secret company that was called NoNameYet.com, and they were going to make a nice new Linux distribution, and it was going to be the best thing ever based on Debian, but with a regular 6 month release schedule, and funded by a spaceman, and it was going to make selections in terms of software, so you would get to you would just install it, and it would have a useful desktop that you could run. Only main problem is that they were using GNOME, and so this is not quite the best way to do these things, in my humble opinion. So I spoke to the African spaceman, and I said, you need to get into KDE, because an awful lot of people are going to be wanting to use this Ubuntu stuff, but they're going to want to use it with KDE. And so I became the first Ubuntu community member, and I packaged KDE for it, and I've not stopped doing it since.
Pretty cool story.
Yeah, that is really good. That is really good. So I mean, well, just putting this back to you then, Jonathan, for a moment. So before you got involved with doing this for Kubuntu, what software development and software packaging previous experience had you had with packaging and Linux and those kinds of things?
Pretty minimal. I was just out of university, and at university you get your lecturers who tell you this is how you write a Java program. And you use this function to give you a button, and you use this other function, and then you can display something on the screen. And I thought, that's all very nice, but what happens if I want to put a shinier button, or what happens if I want to put a scroll bar or something? how does this actually work beyond the notes in the lecture? How does a real program work? I can understand how you can make a program with a button in it now, but I don't understand how you can make an actual text editor or a program that draws pretty diagrams. And the only way to understand how software really works is to get into open source software, because then you can see the source code and go, oh, right, so that's the way that the program needs to be structured in order to do that. Or, there's this handy library out here called Qt that gives you all these powerful tools that you can very easily make a program that draws pretty diagrams. And so at university, I made Umbrello, which draws UML diagrams, and that UML is very academic. Academics love that stuff. It's very useful in real life as well. And people from NASA were using the software that I made at university, and they thought, this is great. This AD platform is going to take over the world. At the time, I went to Linux exhibitions, and there was a lot of money floating around, and it was before the dot-com crash. IBM went, where Linux on the desktop is going to take over the world. I thought, that's great. I should get onto that. And so I did. And Linux on the desktop is not taking over the world yet, but I keep trying.
Yeah, I remember those days. In fact, the Linux conference, Linux World Conference and stuff, and IBM and the money that they were putting into it. And indeed, you know, I believed, and I still firmly believe, that Linux will, in time, dominate the desktop. I really did expect it to be there before now. When I put Linux into the company that I worked for, Supertramp, here in the Southwest, we had about 30, 35 desktops, and that was a Red Hat deployment running KDE, and everything, we migrated everything from Windows. The whole company ran on Linux and open source software. And the testimony to that really is that whole system, we were running Linux terminal servers, so we were using thin clients, 35 thin clients into one server, delivering the KDE desktop with those tools and an ERP system, an enterprise resource planning database system, and that whole system running off that one server. I've got a screenshot somewhere of it showing an uptime of 1,034 days. So over 3 years without ever having to reboot it, no desktop crashes, no nothing, and you still can't convince me to this day that when people get their hands on that kind of professional software, and they use it for a little while, as I've found with the years that I've used Kubuntu, you end up never going back. You just love it so much. But let me put that same question to Scarlett and ask you, Scarlett. You know, I mean, you've talked about, you know, working with Linux for 10 years, and now you're packaging, and you're part of the Kubuntu team, and you've got your PPA in the Kubuntu Ninjas. You're packaging. What software development experience did you have before getting involved with the Kubuntu project?
University. Unfortunately, the school I went to was very Microsoft, and I was very unhappy. They used Microsoft tools and everything. So I had to do all of my Linux learning on my own, self-taught. I understand code. I can read it. I can hunt down bugs. But if you hand me a blank sheet, I'm just I don't know what to do. I'm determined to figure it out, though. And this is a good place to start, which is probably why I liked packaging so much. It's a good place to start.
Yeah. That's very encouraging for me, and I'll come to why that is in a moment, because I'm still trying to sort of get my head around this a little bit, but you know, so for you, Scarlett, I mean, we know why you have come to the Kubuntu community, but why would you say people out there that are thinking about using a Linux distribution, why would you recommend that they use Kubuntu? Why should folks use Kubuntu as the distribution?
Well, It's stable. It is very stable. I like living on the edge. So I came from distributions, the rolling releases. I don't want to mention names, but
Sure.
and every update, you typically crash and burn and had to find your way out. And the community was usually with the attitude, if you don't want to fix it, then go away. So you just kind of had to learn how to fix your computer when it crashes or get out. When I came to Kubuntu, I'm like waiting for it to crash. I'm like, wait a minute. I rebooted. Isn't it supposed to like have, of course, working with the Plasma 5, we have our moments. But the good news is now I have all that past experience. I know how to get my computer operational again. But it's just the stability. It's solid. It's just, if you're new to Linux, it's definitely perfect because you don't have to worry about crashes. It's just, that was one thing that I'm like, wow, it doesn't crash. So, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, do you know, I have been, I can completely concur with that stability thing. I mean, I've been using Kubuntu now for quite a lot of years, and I was a once upon a time a Red Hat guy, and I started off on Red Hat and KDE 3, and then Mandrake and KDE on that, and then from there to Kubuntu after I dabbled around with Gentoo for a while. And but it, do you know, it just works. It just always works. And for me, I'm such a busy person, and I'm doing so many things. I don't have time to try to figure out why the printer won't print again, or why it's lost the drivers again, or why it's done some update, because I just need it to work, like a hammer or a saw would do, because I'm a bit of a pragmatic sort of engineering type. And it, in fairness, do you know, it, I don't think it really has ever let me down. I could ever say that it's ever let me down. The stability is astonishing. And indeed, as I said to you, 1,034 days in an enterprise setting, running all of those workstations and desktops, no outages, no problems. So I concur with what you're saying. But let's make the challenge a little bit more difficult for why people should use Kubuntu. So, Jonathan, I wonder whether you could persuade Mr. Wordsworth why he should walk away from his iMac, and or better still, why he should just overload his iMac with Kubuntu.
There's a number of reasons, and I don't know John well enough to know which one is likely to work with him. So supposing I'm a Quaker, and I go to Quaker meeting, and we're idealists. We don't, in terms of religion, we don't care about any book or anything. We care about peace and truth and simplicity and equality, and we are idealists. And so if you are an idealist in terms of computing, you care about having the freedom to be able to do whatever you want with the computer, the freedom to be able to change it and modify it, upgrade it whenever you want it, fix bugs, pay somebody else to fix bugs. If you're an idealist, the freedom software, the freedom is a main reason why you will want to use it over Mac. If you are a pragmatist in terms of economics, then the money is kind of a no-brainer in terms of you don't have to pay for the beta and then get charged again for the release candidate and then get charged again for the upgrade. You can download it at no cost, and you can upgrade to the new version. We've got a new version out today. You just upgrade. You don't need to pay anybody any amount of money. In terms of App Store, we've got, from the archive, we've got 10,000 different programs that you can install that does everything from games to scientific notational programs that are very, very advanced. And so in terms of if you want to use your computer for very specialist stuff, you can just do that without having to go, oh, is it worth £100 to pay for this to this bit of software? You can just try that and use it. What else?
No, it's a... It's a really interesting topic. I mean, Rick set you an impossible task there, because I develop iOS applications, so I don't really have a choice. It's part of my own business that I run. It's iOS development, so think it's kind of impossible. But the one thing that I do have is I have my Windows PC for gaming, and I guess that's the only reason I haven't shifted that yet to Linux, is because I've got a Steam library of, I don't know, 350 games, and only 80 of them work on Linux, or maybe 120 now, you know. But I think that's a really interesting... It's cool that games are starting to come to Linux. It's just not quite there enough yet that I can lose my gaming platform, because that's pretty much all I use my Windows PC for, is batching out games, because I do my work on my Mac. Sorry, that's just a random topic there that I thought...
And Steam, of course, works on Ubuntu now, and Steam are shipping their Steam OS, so they are going to make sure that every program that they make also runs on Debian and Ubuntu, and so that will change pretty fast.
No, it's a really exciting time. I think it's going to be really cool, because I think there's a lot of people like me who are gamers, and it's like, we obviously use our PCs for other things, but the most important thing is that when I get home from work, I can boot up the game that came out yesterday. And I think it would be really cool, because a lot of game developers are starting to move that way now, so I hope that in turn sees a lot of people coming over to Ubuntu in the coming year or two, because they're like, don't need Windows anymore. So.
Well, I'm conscious now. I'm looking at the time, and I'm conscious of the fact that we are, you know, we've got ourselves quite into a long show. And for me, I mean, I've got loads more questions here and loads more things that I'd like to get answers to, and we just simply are not going to get the time to go through all of this tonight, right now. But one of the things that I'd really like to ask, just to sort of focus on a little bit, is I've been trying for quite a while, Jonathan, to kind of to get involved in Kubuntu packaging, and I've been and read so much material on the Ubuntu website, googling things, trying to find my way around the Kubuntu website, and I seem to find myself on kind of just lost trails where I can't seem to pull it all together, and I really want to reach a point where I can package like Scarlett's doing, and I can contribute to this distribution that I've used for such a long time. I'm clearly doing something wrong. What should I be doing, and how should I approach this so that I can get myself up to speed and contribute better to this community?
So I think the problem is that there are a range of different ways that you can develop packages on Debian packaging, which Ubuntu uses Debian packaging. And so whenever you read a tutorial, it will take a slightly different approach to it. And these approaches are not entirely compatible. And so, yes, there is. When somebody comes in and says, how do I start packaging? I actually don't point them to a tutorial, because I don't think there are any very good ones. I just take them onto a shared server and help them out one-on-one to help them get into it and answer any questions, because that's usually the best way. I can tell a little story here, which is that back when an African spaceman was wanting to start Ubuntu, one of the first ideas of Ubuntu was to take over the entirety of the free software world by forking every single bit of free software into a super mirror and using distributed version control, which it didn't exist at the time, so it was quite new and novel. And then Ubuntu would become the center of everybody's development of software, even if that originally came from somewhere else. And packages would get made daily for Ubuntu, and that would be the best platform to use. And this ended up in changing the way that packages are made, so that the entire software is held in bizarre version control. And this is kind of inelegant, because it's really slow and clunky, and means that you ending up with the changes from upstream and changes from your package, and it's very, very messy. And so I apologize if you ever did come across that, but it's not a very easy way to learn to package. And so don't read the Ubuntu literature, because it points towards that slightly crazy idea of distributed Ubuntu packaging. Just come on to hash Kubuntu Devel, and we'll go over a one-to-one tutorial, or Scarlett will take over as a tutorial, and we'll show you how to do it.
I think the best is have Jonathan run you through one with the server, the EC2, And then try one on your own, and if you have any questions at all, ask me, and I'll help you out.
Okay, so well, Jonathan did that with me once. I mean, and I unfortunately got a gap of time between doing it, but fortunately I knew that was going to happen. So I sat down and I wrote a whole sequence of notes and I copied and pasted the history out of the terminal. And I was looking at that just the other day because, as you saw, I posted on IRC, hey, look, I've materialized again. Here I am back, because I've had a really busy summer and a new job, and life just gets ahead of you. And but I am going to go back and revisit those notes and try to package something else. Interestingly, just a few days ago, I was looking for things to package, and I ended up looking at SDDM, because I saw that had a bug open for it saying it needed packaging and building, but I got lost in that pretty quick.
That needs to be closed, because I fell for that trap too, and it's being worked on. That needs to be closed, that SDDM bug saying that.
Okay.
That's not an easy way to start. That's a login manager. That will need to integrate with the boot system and with the PAM, with the permission system. And if you did it wrong, as is very easy to do, then it won't work. And so that's not a great way to start. Don't start with that. Start with that.
I can look at the list and see if there's an easy one for you, and see if you want to do it that way, because I know more of what might be easier.
Absolutely. I mean, to be fair, one of the reasons why I only interact on the IRC channel now and again, and this goes back to, in actual fact, to older communities, which you were talking about, but I've developed this sense of not wanting to ask very much on IRCs, because I always feel like I'm interrupting people, like I'm disturbing them, and I'm waiting for somebody to bash me with the RTFM line, which is what I used to get 7 or 8 years ago.
Yes.
But I think the message I'm getting from you guys is don't feel like that. Ask for things to do, ask to be pointed in the right direction, and interact.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, look, I'm certainly going to do that. I just want to ask you both about KDE Academy, because you went over to Academy. So what was that like for you, Scarlett? What did you think of Academy?
Wow. Well, for one, I'm actually very shy, and I'm going very, very, very far away to meet people I've never met before, except on text through IRC. I was a bit overwhelmed, but as every day progressed and I met more people and I talked to more people, everybody is just so close and really nice and kind, and made me feel at home. I feel like I made real friends over there, and it makes me feel closer to the community, to KDE and to Kubuntu. I'm going to chalk it up as one of the best experiences I've had in my life.
Wow. That's a testimony, isn't it? Cracky, what a testimony, Jonathan.
The KDE Academy Conference, it is life reaffirming. It always gives me new energy in terms of we have innovative ideas that come out of it that then goes into practice over the next year of development, and the talks they always inspire me, and the energy from the people at the conference always inspire me. So it's always worth it, going to these free software conferences to feel the energy from the community.
And John, maybe we should get two PayPal buttons up on the website now, John. I want to go to Academy as well, definitely. And Academy was closer this year as well, because it was in Europe, wasn't it? Was it in Belgium somewhere? Well, not closer to you, Scarlett. Of course, you had to fly away.
Yeah, no, it was not close to me at all. It was near the Czech Republic.
Right.
In some ways, in Europe is Academy. But one of the great things about open source development is you get to travel to exciting places of the world. So I've been invited to Kano in northern Nigeria, to Bengaluru in India, I've been out to Tenerife and Gran Canaria, and I've traveled all across Canada and the United States just to go to these conferences, and it's a great bonus of contributing to open source projects that you then get to a trip across the world to see exciting places.
And how does that get funded? Because, I mean, these communities, of course, haven't got any money. This is all volunteers doing. Do you have to pay for this out of your working schedule, Jonathan, or is there...
Within Kubuntu, we have a bank account with some amount of money in it, and people who download Ubuntu get asked, do you want to donate some money? One of the tick boxes is to the flavor, and after a little bit of behind the scenes and slightly public arguing with Canonical, we managed to get access to the donations that people have been giving them for Ubuntu flavors like ours. So if you want to go to anything for Kubuntu, there are funds available for that travel.
Fantastic. That sounds really good. So, well, do you know, John, I think that, you know, maybe we want to do an at random podcast and go and take it on the road and go and visit Academy. I mean, you're in Stockholm and I'm in the UK. We could get anywhere in Europe really easily. Yeah. So
that sounds really cool. I mean, those events, like you were saying, Jonathan, like I found that even across all the different industries, just going to a place where like minds are together gives you so much energy to go away and keep doing the thing that you're doing. So I can imagine really cool to go along and just get some of that energy and that innovation in those environments. So,
well, do you know, guys, I mean, we've just pushed the limit on this show. We really have. We are so over time already. We should have got to that Magnitude track, over half an hour ago. But this has just been absolutely fabulous. And I am so grateful to both Jonathan and Charlotte that you guys could spend so much time with us and answer so many questions and really, describe the Kubuntu Linux distribution and its community. And I'm fairly sure that our viewers and listeners will, I know it's a lengthy show, but I think they'll really appreciate the content. So thank you, Scarlett, for taking the time to come and chat with us. It's been a real pleasure talking with you today.
Thank you for having me.
And hey, maybe when we release in March, maybe you'd consider coming back and telling us about that. And maybe we could talk about Plasma 5. Maybe that would be released then.
I love talking about Plasma 5 anytime.
Awesome. Jonathan, I know you've had a very busy, busy day, and I'm so appreciative of the time that you've spent with us. So thank you so much for that today.
You're very welcome, and I will say to all your viewers, you're always encouraged to report bugs and then help fix those bugs. So you can come and join us in Hashtag Ubuntu Deval to help out.
Fantastic. And where's the best place for people to find out more about Kubuntu? Have we got a website they should visit, Jonathan?
Of course, kubuntu.org website. But also we have Facebook pages and Google Plus pages, and Planet KDE and Planet Ubuntu are ways to get the buzz behind the scenes.
Fantastic. So, well, of course, Jackson really missed out today because, we could have kept him up extra late for an extra long show so that he could be extra exhausted. But, of course, he would just be in time for the midnight feed. So maybe we're working that schedule, John. What do you think?
I suspect he's still now bumping a little baby up and down on his knee going, why won't you stop crying?
Yeah, probably so. Well, okay, folks, so you can find out more about what we're doing at random.org.uk on our website, and of course watch this these live shows on YouTube, and of course you can follow us on Google Plus and interact with us there. As always, I'm going to fire up Amarok on my KDE desktop, and I'm going to go and take a scroll through the vast array of Creative Commons licensed free music that's available from magnatune.com, which you can just get access to directly from your Amarok music player. Not too much plugs for this fantastic software, John. Please don't kick me off. I'm glad we haven't got that taser yet. So we're going to leave you with that, and we'll catch you back in episode 3 for season 2. So all that's left to say is thank you very much for watching. thank you to our guests, Jonathan and Scarlett. I've been
a pleasure meeting you both, Jonathan and Scarlett.
Good to meet you.
So, yeah, thanks again. Thank you, Scarlett. Thank you, Jonathan. And I'm going to say and of course, thank you, John. And keep saving those pennies. And for the next show, maybe you can have some beer. And anyway, I'm shutting up. It's cheerio from me. The final word is with you, John.
Cool. Good night. And thank you, everybody.
Up the waves.